You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Well, the Maxim Institute has put out a new policy paper. It's called Eroding Our Conscience, Why We Must Shore Up Religious Freedom in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And as I am wont to do here on RCR, you go right to the source. So I have Marcus Roberts along, who is the author of this document. He's a senior fellow, senior research fellow at Maxim, and he's the author of the report. So, Marcus, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Simon. Thanks for having me.
So, right at the outset, you start with the word eroding our conscience. So you're suggesting that religious freedom as a concept in New Zealand is, well, not just under threat, but is being eroded. So, I mean, talk us through your report. What drew you to do this? And what are some of the key things you're seeing?
Yeah, sure. So I was drawn to do this actually from a couple of examples that I thought were quite problematic around religious freedom that arose during COVID. And they were not ones that I came across myself. There was actually another research paper that was written by Maxim Institute by Alex Pink around COVID and the Constitution, where he had mentioned a couple of these. So hat tip to Alex for getting me started. And if you read my report and like it, I strongly recommend you go on the Maxim website and read Alex's paper, COVID and the Constitution. Anyway, but he highlighted a couple of examples where our judges and our policymakers, the ones who in the legal sphere are tasked with implementing and enforcing and protecting our human rights as they are set out in our legislation, we're not doing the job adequately. There were a couple of concerning examples where either religious liberty was forgotten about or perhaps ignored, or it just wasn't really understood as why this would be important. And so those sort of got me thinking about it. And I thought, okay, well, that's interesting. Have a look at that. Those examples. And then I thought, well, why should we care? Why is it that religious freedom is in our Bill of Rights? Why is it in international documents? Why should we care if there are problematic examples where religious liberty has not been protected to the full? And so that's really what got me onto the paper, is trying to set out why we should care and in what ways are religious freedom being, as I say in the title, eroded. So, yeah, that's the background, and if that sounds interesting, then I'd suggest people, go read it, but we'll discuss more, I'm sure.
Definitely. Well, I'm certainly going to encourage listeners to jump onto the Maxim website, find Marcus's paper. I should have added, actually, for listeners' benefit, while Marcus is a senior researcher, he's also a practitioner and someone who knows the law and is also involved in academically. So you come in from quite a legal side. So give us a couple of examples. I can think of some, but I'm the one doing the interview, so I'll throw you the questions. What are a couple of the examples?
Sure. So the ones that I thought about, that Alex thought about, and then I researched further, that got me inspired to look into it. The first one was when there was legislation presented that gave the government the power to do certain things during COVID, namely the lockdown, so forcing people to stay home unless they had an excuse, and also then the vaccine mandates for certain sectors and professions. What happens when you have a piece of legislation which may impact upon the rights contained within the Bill of Rights Act is that the Ministry of Justice prepares a report that goes to the Attorney General. And the Attorney General's job is to say to his cabinet colleagues and ultimately to Parliament, look, this piece of legislation has the potential or does impact upon people's religious liberty, human rights. But they can be justified, or that we should go ahead with it anyway, or something like that. And so this report that the Ministry of Justice provides for the Attorney General is sort of the briefing document that he then uses to report to Parliament. And when it came to the vaccine mandates, when it came to the lockdown orders, they did a report saying, how will this impact upon people's freedoms? Freedom of association will be impacted. Freedom of movement will be impacted. But what was interesting in those reports is that freedom of religion was not mentioned at all. And it kind of blew my mind a little bit, because the Bill of Rights Act is not very long. It's about 20 enumerated rights. if your job is to go through a piece of legislation and figure out, okay, which rights are potentially impacted, not even that they are, but potentially impacted, to miss out freedom of religion seemed an, well, to me at least, an obvious miss. And so that started, got me to start thinking about, well, these policy people aren't silly. I don't think it's deliberate. I think it's more that it's just beyond their ken. They just have no idea that actually being locked in your home might impact upon your ability to go to church, go to temple, go to mosque, and that that might be a big deal. And so that was one example where I think the legal framework was really dropped, and in a way that suggested there was a concerning lack of care or recognition of the importance of freedom of religion from our policymakers.
Oh, I remember it, if I might. I remember it clearly because I was at the time asking, I think it was Andrew Little was the Minister of Justice. I recall specifically asking, and of all the rights, how they'd missed freedom of religion. Slight, probably different view to yours. I think it probably was more, and it's not to start a debate per se, but I think it was more deliberate, or rather it's from a, says me to the researcher, but my sense was that was just seen as irrelevant. Religion's irrelevant. It's almost an unnecessary right. Why would we bother ourselves with it? Was sort of my take, but I thought it was a shocking omission.
Are you there?
You just cut out.
I know. Everything turned off. Oh, just a sec. Okay. Sorry, mate. Can you hear me?
You're all right. I can hear you.
Okay. I don't know. I've got the video on, but it's just not liking it. Can we continue on maybe when you...
Yeah, we can. Seriously.
You responded? Well,
yeah, I had just... Where did I cut out for you?
Oh, you were... I don't know why. So the second example... that comes to mind is this, one of the cases where a number of Christian denominations and also a couple of mosques joined together and tried to judicially review the decision of the government to shut down places of worship, or to not allow places of worship to be opened as the country was slowly reopening, but allowed other places such as supermarkets, petrol stations, bars, et cetera, to open. And the argument was that this was an unjustified limit on the freedom of religion, that there was no reason for doing so, no rationale for doing so. And essentially the court in this particular case said, well, the government said that they were essential. That is a rationale. Now, there is a lot of leeway that the judges will give decision makers, but around judicial review applications. But in this case, it seems to me that merely restating the government's position doesn't answer the question, which is why were these things considered essential and not places of worship? And again, that suggests to me that the people putting in these orders in council that restricted places of worship and the judges that are backing them up just have no idea why you would think that going to church on a Sunday was essential, or gathering together on a Friday in mosque and praying together is essential. And of course, you might get a very different answer if you asked someone who does these things, a religious person. They might say, well, yes, it's nice to be able to go to a bar, but actually for me, going to church is essential. That it's actually more essential than getting food if I firmly believe what's going on in church is important and is a foretaste of heaven. So again, that suggests, I thought, a disconnect or a lack of understanding by the people in the legal fraternity about why religious freedom is important, but also the substance of it, no real understanding of what religious people actually believe or why they would believe that.
Is there an element, do you think, and certainly through your research, that religion is just seen as irrelevant? So to put a slight nuance, as you say, the judges, civil servants, politicians, other influence and decision makers, well, we see in New Zealand sorry, as I back up a bit, in New Zealand, we're seeing a much more secular developing society, and I think that reflects into our judiciary and elsewhere. Is it that they really just see this as now irrelevant? So it's not just that they don't understand, they don't feel they need to understand. This is just an archaic, silly thing that some people believe. It really, really shouldn't be afforded the title or the I don't know what's the right word, that shouldn't be a right, really. Yeah. It's not that, it's not the same as a right of association or the right of free speech.
I think that if you don't practice religion or you don't have anyone close to you, family or friends who practice, you're in a bubble of people who don't practice, then it is harder to make the mental and imaginative leap to put yourself in someone who is religious shoes and figure out, okay, what impact will this have on them? Why is it important to them? So, yes, I do think that there is a feeling of irrelevancy, conscious or unconscious, I'm not sure. But it is hard, I think, that if you don't know anyone who's religious or you don't see people, and this is one of my recommendations, it's for religious people, but actually for all of us, religious or not religious, to be more vocal about why freedom of religion is important. If you don't see anyone making those public arguments, then it is very easy to say it's irrelevant. I don't see the importance of it, whereas I do see the importance of freedom of association. And coupled with, as I start in my paper, the census shows that we are becoming a nation of no religion more and more. It's about half and half, and the next census, which should be due out any month now, will be, I think, will confirm that trend further. But also the strength of those of religions and those who practice them, I think, is also waning, not only in numerical numbers, but just in the public visibility, I think, of religion is becoming less. And so that impacts upon these decision makers. And that's what I'm trying to say in this paper, is that we need to, all of us, not just religious people, need to recapture why freedom of religion is important. And I go through that in the paper. And then make it clear to society at large, including these policymakers and judges and lawyers and politicians. There's a great quote that I come back to a couple of times from a former Chief Justice of New Zealand, Shana Lykes, where effectively she says human rights are only protected insofar as they are seen as important by society as a whole. And so if we don't see it as important, we can't expect judges or politicians who aren't religious and don't know anyone who's religious to protect it for us. I think that is a growing concern in that respect. And again, that's part of the reason I wrote the paper, to try and encourage people to think about why it's important and why they need to start saying it's important publicly.
Well, look, absolutely. I mean, we've seen a lot of our rights being well challenged. In fact, I sat down recently with Professor Bruce Pardy. He's a legal professor, scholar out of Canada, who's been talking about how actually the broader rights are being slowly replaced by lots of little laws and regulations. And for me, your paper sort of fits into that space somewhat, that, here's this. I would actually call it an inherent right. To slightly disagree with Shana Lyas. I think rights exist, such as freedom of speech, freedom of belief or religion, regardless of how many people or the state believes in it. That's a whole philosophical debate, but they're there regardless.
I think I agree with you, Simon, but I think the point Shana Lyas was pointing to was that we can't expect the state to protect those inherent rights if society as a whole is not prepared to value it.
Exceptionally important point. Mm. So, I mean, jumping back to basics, because we've obviously illustrated some of the problems. Mm. I think a lot of listeners will know of these examples. But why is religious freedom important? Isn't it just your private little space? You're allowed to have your own little thoughts to the God or gods you believe in. Why does it need to be a right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. Why is it important? I say that it's important for two broad reasons. Firstly, it's important for individuals. So to the extent that we are free to, you're right, think these thoughts or have these private beliefs, but religion is not just something that demands of us private thoughts and beliefs. It also demands of us action and worship and public gathering and putting into practice what we believe, you know, faith without works, etc. There's another debate about that. But anyway, the point is that to the extent that the state limits our ability to either believe through propaganda and coercion and the threat of taking away benefits if we don't toe the party line, or that they prevent us from doing things like go to church or worship together, wherever that might be, or to open up a religious soup kitchen or an adoption agency or all these other ways in which belief is manifest, then that limits our ability to live full lives, to live lives in which we are questioning and working out the most fundamental questions that all of us should be asking ourselves. Why are we here? What is our purpose? What happens after we leave this earth? And you might come to the conclusion that who knows why we're here, there is no purpose, and nothing happens to us after we leave this earth. That's fine. But your ability...
Thank you, Nietzsche.
Yeah. but the point is that our ability to do that is also honed by having a free marketplace of ideas. And I think there's quite an echo of freedom of speech and having the marketplace of ideas and people living out their religion, seeing how that works out in practice, allows us to make those answers or to reach those answers around what is important in life. And it might be that nothing's important in life, and that's our answer. But we are free to reach that conclusion by having religious thoughts and practices freely able to be observed and to dabble in if we so desire. And also, that's not just a private individual benefit, but obviously our thoughts about what is ultimately important in life, our religious beliefs, are going to fundamentally flow into the way in which we exercise our civic rights and responsibilities, particularly voting. We are going to vote a certain way, but presumably it will flow from our beliefs in our religious beliefs. And so to the extent that we are a free and democratic society is ultimately predicated on the extent that we are free to explore religions. So it's important for societies, but also empirically, for individuals, but it's also empirically important for societies. I go through in the paper, but I say that societies with religious freedom or high incidence of religious freedom are more likely to be peaceful, they're more likely to be economically advanced, and they're also less likely to be prone to authoritarianism, because religion provides you with that societal ballast between the individual and the state, that your religion is another form of authority which will hopefully protect against an overbearing state. So that is good for everyone in our society, not just the shrinking numbers of believers.
I think that last point amongst many is actually exceptionally important. And, you know, I think of it this way. Why is it that authoritarian states move very swiftly to shut down or replace religions? It's because that's deemed as a threat to their power. And so put it in very crude terms, as I listened to you and have read your paper, that actually religion or freedom of religion, so not a particular religion per se, but the freedom of religion allows actually that greater societal freedom. I'd also point out, I think you've articulated it too, you know, we just, each and every one of us holds very, very deep beliefs about the way that life should be, how we should live our lives, and actually, we need that freedom, to coalesce with others of similar views, but also to debate into that public sphere. I suppose for me, it's actually just a deeply fundamental right. And I've had this debate with philosophers and even the Free Speech Union of, you know, which right comes first, something like the freedom of religion, freedom of belief, freedom of speech. But I suppose they're all interlinked. Final question. Because you've got some suggestions of how we might You've intimated one of them, which is that in society we've got to talk about it a bit more, but you've also focused in on the judges and the politicians.
So a way in which we can increase judges' awareness and policymakers' awareness of religious sensibilities and beliefs is a very practical one of just including it as part of the professional development, the PD requirements of judges. There are different ways in which different organizations that do religious workshops. So in the same way that we expect judges to be au fait with the latest developments in equity or torts law or something like that, we should also expect them to have some basic understanding of religions in New Zealand. And also that's important as we become more religiously fractured. There are more and varied faiths within our community that you need to have a basic understanding if you're going to adjudicate these religious freedom cases, why it is important for X religion to do Y. What is the actual underlying belief and why is it that this is an important part of this person's life and their, you know, their deepest convictions, as you're talking about, Simon. So that's the first one. And I actually have a very similar recommendation for policymakers, that this requirement, those working in this area, those preparing reports for the Attorney General to discuss, you know, to say which rights have been impacted, need to know, well, in what way is religion manifest in New Zealand? Because if you don't know how it's manifest, you're not going to know when those rights to manifest religion have been impacted, as I either consciously or unconsciously we saw in that example we started with. But finally, I, as with so many problems in life and policy problems, I'm constantly reminded of the very famous movie that everyone should watch if they haven't already, The Blues Brothers, where Jake and Elwood Blues go back to their orphanage and they're told by Cab Calloway, you boys need to get to church. And so it is a something I think often we can, those of us who are religious, need to be strong in our faiths, but also be confident in expressing those faiths publicly so that people can realize that it is actually important. I mean, you can see why no one thought it was a problem in shutting down churches when no one really complained in the churches themselves.
Oh, and that's been a huge debating point, to be honest, ever since, as I move about the country and talk to different people. Well, I'm trying to find the right word, from hurt to frustration to, why did the church not stand? Yeah, and look, my own very quick commentary on that is you can hardly, as a church leader, talk about your own relevance when you were some of the first to shut the doors and lock everything down. It's like, well, hold on a moment. Is this essential or is it not? But I better leave it there. But Marcus, thank you first and foremost for coming on the show and talking us through everything, and of course for writing this policy paper. And for listeners, you can jump onto the Maxim website, and the paper's called Eroding Our Conscience, Why We Must Shore Up Religious Freedom in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So Marcus, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much, Simon. Cheers.
Our text machine is now live. Send us your thoughts by texting your message to 2057. That's 2057. So get in touch with us now.
Here at Reality Check Radio, we're on a mission to revive honest media. It's a good mission, and now you can be an integral part of it by joining the RCR Foundation Members Club. You'll receive exclusive benefits, including discounted merch, your backstage pass to join hosts for interactive behind-the-scenes discussions, and the popular daily curated news summary, RCR Bites, delivered to your email inbox every weekday morning, keeping you on the pulse of the news that matters in just a few minutes per day. To find out more, check www.realitycheck.radio/members. That's realitycheck.radio/members.